In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yes, indeed. It is time for us to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn with Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Hello, Mr. Adams.
Hello, Mr. Kimball. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Happy Monday to you.
And to you as well.
I saw the pictures, and then I also happened to drive by, but your home looked especially lovely for Christmas.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, like I take a lot of pleasure in putting the lights out. So, it's something that my dad always used to do, and I have a couple of uncles who frankly kind of have a little bit of a problem. I come by it honestly.
I have to talk though about something serious here, and that I'm sure you knew this was coming, Alan. But
yeah,
please tell us about bologna cake.
The bologna cake. So here's the deal. I've developed a little bit of a fascination, we'll say, with weird appetizers that pop up on the internet. Now that tendency's always been there. It's always been a part of me, part of my personality. But I feel like these last few months have really allowed it to sort of bubble up to the surface in a way that maybe isn't entirely healthy. So what I did, I uncovered the recipe for something called bologna cake, what it is it's very simple. It's you get a bunch of bologna. And then you frost it with some cream cheese into which you have folded roughly 2/3 of a packet of ranch seasoning, one of those little bags, and then you layer between the slices, and then you frost it like a cake, and you cut it like a cake. And as you saw in the pictures, I thought my layering was quite nice.
Oh, it looked beautiful.
It came together really nicely. As far as the taste. Now, I'm not one who has a particularly sophisticated palate, and so I would call it surprisingly tasty, but also a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If that makes sense. So I had a couple of small slices, and shared out a couple of small slices. It's the majority of the cake is still sitting in my house. It's probably not going to all get consumed, because again, here's the thing: it's like a pound of bologna. Like there's a lot of bologna there,
but the good news is that'll keep for like months.
Well, that's the thing. Like we've got it covered, so it's not going to go like stale or anything. So who knows? Like I saw the number of Facebook friends offered up some suggestions. One particularly good one, I think it came from Lance Blackstone, was to deep fry it. And that had me intrigued. So that's something I may consider going forward. But yeah,
well, I applaud your culinary adventurousness.
Well, it's just fun, and it's one of those things where it's like the fact that I go into it not expecting to be able to actually eat it really takes the pressure off because it's like hey, this is edible. That's a win.
Bonus. There you go. All right, let's talk movies. You saw three over the weekend, and Carrie and I have each seen one of them, and then the third only you have seen. Where would you like to begin?
Let's start. It's an interesting collection of movies because I think they all have very valid. They're all very valid to discuss. I liked all three. I'll put that out there. I enjoyed all three movies to varying degrees, but I found them all to be relatively impactful. I'll start with The Midnight Sky.
And that's the one movie. I saw.
Okay. So I really liked this movie. A lot of people, a lot's not right, but the people out there in the discourse been people have come down on either side of it as far as how they felt about the movie. I, as someone who generally tends to enjoy end of the world movies, I'm not necessarily about post apocalypse so much as the apocalypse, like that stuff, the post-apocalyptic stuff is fun, but actually, you know, seeing how things are playing out is always interesting to me. Now, The Midnight Sky, which directed by George Clooney, who also stars, is a fairly quiet apocalypse movie. It's adapted from a very good novel by Lily Brooks Dalton called Good Morning Midnight. Actually, it's really funny. I raved about this book when I reviewed it back in 2016. So much so that, fun fact, Rich, if you purchase the paperback of Good Morning Midnight, a blurb from my review is featured on the back cover.
Hey, how about that?
So it was interesting to watch this movie because certain things that I'm not going to talk about on the air, I knew going in. And that definitely changed the experience for me, I think. Sheridan was unfamiliar, and so a lot of this stuff came as more of a surprise to her. But the basic gist, for those who don't know, something, it's never named, and it's never really explained, which is, for me, that's a personal, like, I'm a big fan of movies that do this, that don't explain what the inexplicable happening is that causes the end.
I like that, too, yeah.
You know, and they straight up just call it the event, which I think is fantastic. So this event, which we don't really know what it is, we know it involves radiation and diminishing air quality and stuff like that, but we don't really know the specifics. It's just taken place just a matter of weeks ago, and it's already overwhelming the planet. Like the vast majority of the surface of the world is being rendered uninhabitable, like irradiated, unbreathable air, the whole shebang. And so we've got this guy, Dr. Augustin Lofthaus, that's Clooney, he's a scientist whose area of expertise, we find out over the course of the film, is in seeking out potentially habitable worlds for humanity to emigrate to. The event has happened. They're evacuating the Arctic Research Station that he's at, but he chooses to stay instead of evacuate. He's got some sort of ailment. I don't think they ever specifically say, but he does. He's got a dialysis machine, so I assume it's some sort of renal issue, kidney issue, something like that. So he basically lives alone at this base, treating himself and trying to reach out and make contact with any of the various active space missions to warn them about coming home. But only one of those missions is still online, and that is the spacecraft Aether, which is on its way back from a two-year mission to explore the potential habitability of K-23, which is a moon of Jupiter that Dr. Lofthaus, in fact, helped discover, which is a fun little sort of tie-in. It's a five-person crew. You've got Commander Adewole, played wonderfully by David Oyelowo, and then you've got Mitchell, played by Kyle Chandler, Sanchez, played by Damian Bashir, Maya, played by Tiffany Boone, and sort of our lead communications officer slash connection on the ship, Sully, played wonderfully by Felicity Jones. They had a successful mission. Like, it turns out that K-23 can support human life, but they're very anxious to get home and sort of share their research. Of course, there's nothing really to come back to, and Dr. Lofthaus is struggling to keep it together as he's waiting. But his situation is complicated by the inexplicable appearance of a mysterious mute little girl, played by a young lady named Kaylin Springall, who's never done anything before. Like, she's never been in a movie before, anything. She's wonderful. She's mute, but she's otherwise unscathed, and he sort of takes it on himself, reluctantly, but he does, to sort of take care of her, even as he's dealing with his treatments and his desperate efforts to contact the ship. The ship, having problems of their own, they can't make contact. They don't really know what's going on, and it starts to take on dire undertones, and they have other assorted space-related issues that I'm not going to spoil here. Just know that you know, their trip home is complicated even before they have any understanding of what's happening. And so I think that's kind of where I'm going to stop as far as talking about the plot. I don't want to reveal too much, because I feel like this movie has a couple of really good ones that I think really enhance the experience. What I will say is I love sci-fi that allows itself to be quiet. Now, this movie does have some big set-piece moments, primarily the space stuff, but it really focuses on the sort of, you know, what it means, the idea of being the last. Like, the apocalypse that they have in this movie moves so fast and impacts so deeply that there's no room to think about what comes next. So it's just like, I mean, basically, except for people who are in the sky, there really isn't a next. And so when you add that truth into the story, it has this sort of emotional heft that you don't always get from this kind of movie. And again, I have to stress, do not equate quiet with dull. Like, this is not a dull movie.
No.
It's quiet, but it's not dull. It's very engaging, and it takes very full advantage of the sort of different flavors of isolation that we get, whether it's like actually being alone or being completely separated from everything that you know, or anything like that. And it's just, especially considering the circumstances of the last few months, like, isolation is something that we can all kind of relate to some degree or another. And so seeing that play out in this context, I think is really, really interesting. You know, I was kind of surprised to hear that Clooney was directing a sci-fi movie. Like, this didn't really seem like his thing. But I think he handles it really well. I mean, he's a very good director. I didn't know how he would handle sort of the CGI end of things, but I think he does pretty well. It's not super flashy, but I mean, it's the sort of movie where, I mean, flashy's kind of the last thing that you want. And it's a great performance out of him as well. Him and his, let's face it, spectacular beard.
Letterman-like beard.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But it's like, he's haggard and he's rueful and it's all shot through with this wonderful sense of cynicism. Like, he's just broken. And it just, that sort of brokenness works so wonderfully, especially when you set him alongside this young girl who is, who's quietly great in her own way. And then you've got the space crew. Love Felicity Jones. She's great. Yellow O is incredibly talented. I would argue that Kyle Chandler is the gold standard for fifth billed movie actors the world around.
He's always solid. He's great.
You know what? And he's always like below the title, but like, he's one of the first half dozen names that you see, and he's always great. Like, he just fits. He fits very well. He's just the epitome of a good working movie actor. Everybody else is good. Like, they're all good. Like, it's a great ensemble. And it's just nice to watch one of these movies where, you know, you don't get that usual sort of noisy end of the world narrative. You know, it sort of focuses on hope and altruism in the face of unflinching hopelessness. And good Lord, Rich, if we don't need that now, when do we need it?
Yeah, like, oh, I just, agree.
Yeah. You know, it's built on the idea that when all else fails, we should always just look upward.
Yeah. I enjoyed the heck out of that. All right. What's next in our discussion?
Let's talk about Wonder Woman 1984.
All right, that's the one neither of us have seen.
Okay. Now, I know Carrie... Carrie was a... correct me if I'm wrong, Carrie. You're a DC guy, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So, look. I'm, like... I need to be very upfront and honest to start. Like, I've been jonesing for a big, noisy superhero movie. Like, I haven't had one for months, and I wanted one, and they gave me one, and yes, I recognize the cynical motives behind this movie, and I do not care. I was thrilled to get it, you know, and, you know, as someone who, you know, despite this job, I'm still not going to the movie theaters, like, I won't be for certainly for the next few months until things really sort of turn a corner. Like, I'm just not going to do it. And so having the chance to see this movie in my own home via HBO Max was wonderful. Like, I'm incredibly grateful that that was something that I was able to do. You know, and I was primed to dig this movie, even though, unlike Carrie, I am a Marvel guy rather than a DC guy. But, so I was primed to dig this movie. And guess what? I dug it. Patty Jenkins is back. She returns to the franchise. She directed the previous movie back in 2017. Also co-wrote the script. It doesn't quite capture the same sort of lightning in a bottle energy of that previous film. Like, it's not quite there. Like, there are some great set pieces. You know, the lead performances are suitably charismatic, and there are a couple of supporting turns that are really going for it. And so ultimately what you get is a movie that's flawed, but satisfying. The basic gist, it's 1984. Diana Prince, Gal Gadot, is living in Washington, D.C., working as an antiquities expert for the Smithsonian, also occasionally fighting crime as Wonder Woman, although she's trying to maintain some level of secrecy about that. Mostly it's a quiet life where she's mostly spending her time thinking about her lost love. So she's got this coworker named Dr. Barbara Minerva, and that's played by Kristen Wiig. She's this mousy sort of gemologist who's generally ignored or kind of the butt of jokes. The only person, you know, there who treats her with any respect is Diana. But she, Dr. Minerva, winds up enlisted by the FBI to identify these artifacts that are recovered after a robbery. And one particular item turns out to be magical with this great power. All you have to do is touch it and make a wish, and that wish will be granted. So Dr. Minerva makes a wish to be like her new friend Diana. And suddenly she's no longer a wallflower. People are noticing her and are interested in her, and they want to be your friend. Diana also makes a wish. Now, neither of these people are aware of what they're doing. She makes a wish that the aforementioned long-lost love return to her. And just like that, Steve Trevor, played by Chris Pine, is back, kind of. He's in another guy's body, but he's who we see. So don't worry. Don't worry, Chris Pine fans. Like, you get plenty of Chris Pine. But meanwhile, you've got this guy, Maxwell Lord, played by Pedro Pascal, TV's The Mandalorian, who's this sort of TV huckster, heads up a oil concern / Ponzi scheme called Black Gold. And he's been researching the stone for years, and he has this plan to turn his business around and make himself a success. He pushes the power in a different direction, opens a new round of possibilities, becoming incredibly dangerous in the process. So his scheme, the repercussions start causing significant chaos across the globe. Diana and Steve undertake to stop him before it's too late. But, you know, he's not alone. Like, there are other people who have their own reasons to keep things as they are, including the aforementioned Dr. Minerva. And so it's up to Diana and Steve to stop Maxwell Lord's plan that could result in, hold on to yourself, Rich, the end of everything.
No.
Now, look, this is a fine addition to the DCEU. Like, and again, it does have its share of flaws. It does benefit from being more of a standalone adventure. Like, it's not bound by the sort of overarching continuity of the DCEU, such as it is. Because it's got a period setting. You know, it's set in 1984, long before the events of any of these other movies, and so it could just focus on its own story. And granted, that story gets kind of thin in some spots, but it's fun. There's a lot of fun. There's some pretty spectacular set pieces, like some great fight scenes, some really good chase sequences. And, you know, there's no disputing the spark between Gal Gadot and Chris Pine. Like, the two of them on screen, they crackle. Like, they have a great energy. And, sure, the ethics of Steve Trevor just sort of appearing in some other dude's body are a little sticky, although the movie refuses to engage with that at all. But, again, it's I totally get why they would come up with a way to get him back, because they are so great together. And Patty Jenkins, like, she has this great knack for sort of building intimacy within the sort of framework of this kind of big budget franchise. Like, she manages to balance character development in CGI better than most. Now, here's the thing. We're going to talk about Kristen Wiig and Pedro Pascal, because they are both going for it in really interesting ways. I thought initially, when I heard about Kristen Wiig, I thought she was going to be woefully miscast. I didn't think she was going to fit. It just didn't seem like the sort of thing that was going to work. She did mostly prove me wrong. Like, she's really solid throughout, although I will admit that the third act CGI doesn't do her any favors. You will understand when you see it. I'm not going to spoil it, but you will get it. And then you've got Pascal's Maxwell Lord is very much a throwback to that sort of chattily charismatic, like, superhero movie villain of the days past. Like, I looked at him, like, he came off to me as sort of a spiritual successor to Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor, like that kind of superhero movie villain, like big and broad and bonkers, and he's got this eye twinkle that lets everyone know that he's in on it. And it's so fun to watch. Like, he just goes for it in such a wonderful way. Look, again, I can't stress enough, plenty of issues with this movie. There's some superfluous material. Like, you could cut 20 minutes from this movie and not at all. The central conflict is a little muddy. There's a lot of stuff that, frankly, under any real scrutiny, is going to fail to make a lot of sense. And they kind of missed the mark on using the period setting. Like, I'd have loved to see them lean into the 80s stuff a little bit more. But ultimately, you know, it's a decent sequel to the film that came before it. You know, and ultimately, like, here's the thing. Like, sometimes you just want to see a superhero do some superhero stuff.
There you go.
You know, a movie like this, it may not be great, but it's good enough.
All right, we've only got a couple of minutes because we spent all that time on Bologna Cake. But tell us about the newest from Pixar.
Look, I mean, we can keep it simple. Like, hey, do you want to watch a beautifully animated film rife with cute characters and silly gags that also causes you to contemplate the deeper meaning of life? Are you interested in a cartoon that may trigger something of an existential crisis? Would you like to laugh or cry in equal measure? Like, if you answer yes to any of that, well, you probably already watch Pixar, because that's what they do. Their latest offering is Soul, which is another just wonderful piece of work. From the service. It's currently streaming on Disney Plus. It's directed by Pete Docter, who is behind you know, notorious Pixar heartbreakers Inside Out and Up. Like, he directed both of those movies.
Oof.
So going in, you know what you're gonna get. And it's co-directed by the playwright Kent Powers. But it's this wonderful film that takes a look at what sort of makes us us. It's this emotional and very well rendered look at where we go after we die and where we are before we were born and, you know, little questions like that. Smart, obviously, absolutely stunning to look at, again, obviously. And this being Pixar, it also takes its opportunities to just really emotionally eviscerate us. Really, you know, showing us the power of self and sacrifice, and offering up their thoughts on just what it's all about. It's just, look, it's a wonderful movie. The basic gist: you've got a guy, Joe, Jamie Foxx, middle school music teacher, but he's got dreams of more. He wants to be a great jazz musician. Everyone is encouraging him to, you know, to take, you know, the offer of full-time employment teaching music. He wants him to give up the chase, but he can't bring himself to do it. And he has a former student, a drummer named Curly, voiced by Questlove, because why not, gets him a shot at sitting in with this jazz legend. And so it looks like, oh, he might finally make it. And then, in this sort of exquisite comic tragedy that only happens in cartoons, I'm not going to spoil it, even though you probably already know if you've watched the trailers, he winds up as a disembodied spirit on a conveyor belt moving toward a bright white glow called the Great Beyond. Kind of reminiscent of, what was the name of, Defending Your Life? Is that right?
Yeah, the Albert Brooks movie. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of got that sort of vibe to it. But anyway, he panics, refuses to go quietly, and accidentally finds his way to a different section of the afterlife, the Great Before. And this is where the souls await the opportunity to be born, where they gain the attributes that define their personalities. It's run by an omnipotent quantum force that exists outside time of space, embodied by these wonderfully cubist line-drawing-looking beings, sort of kinetic Picasso sketches, and they're all named Jerry. He's trying to duck his fate. He poses as a mentor, which is one of the elder souls assigned to help younger souls prepare for life on Earth. He's assigned a particularly obstinate soul named 22, voiced by Tina Fey, who doesn't want to go to Earth. He fesses up and conspires with 22 to use her attributes to make his way back to his body. It's a little more complicated than that. They do make it back to Earth, but 22 comes in tow. They don't really wind up where they want to be, and it's a twist that I'm not going to spoil, although, again, if you've seen the trailers, you might already know. But, again, suffice to say, they're forced to work together to help Joe realize his lifelong dream. And along the way, 22 starts to realize things about her own biases and beliefs. So they have to determine what they want, their purpose, and whether they can do what it takes to get where they're meant to go.
Wow. Well, like, I can't wait.
Just beautiful. It's beautiful. It's touching. The music is outstanding, aesthetically stunning. Everything about this movie, I was delighted. I don't know that it reaches the very tip top of tier of Pixar, but it settles in right nicely right below that, and that is more than enough to be one of the best movies I saw this year, for sure.
Well, three good opportunities for you to enjoy some film entertainment right there. from Alan Adams of the Main Edge. Al, we thank you as always, and we'll do it one last time in 2020 come Wednesday.
Man, crazy to think about, huh?
Yeah, I know it. We'll see you then.
All right, bud.